Check your boobs, the choice is up to you. So go ahead, give it a whirl. No more trouble and strife, it just might save your life. Check those boobs, girls.
Mother and Daughter, Breast of Friends podcast. Hello and welcome back. I have no idea what episode this is right now or even what series we're in. But what I do know is that we are going to be welcoming another fantastic guest, someone that we've already introduced you to, someone that many, many of you have probably met along the way as well. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Sir Gareth Evans. Hello.
I think you got the title wrong there, but maybe Professor or... Doctor, but I think I haven't been knighted yet, quite.
I've done it, right? I have the official capabilities to sir you all right? So you can take that, Gareth.
It, yeah.
100%, 100%. You know, the sword is but a sword, my dear. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. Do you know what is lovely, Gareth? You know, when we first spoke to you on this podcast, and, you know, things have kind of sort of developed quite a bit because it was almost a year ago, you know, when we first started doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've sort of, you know, learned more about different people and different situations, you are held as a bit of a god, my friend.
Oh, well, there's no accounting for taste.
But it is, you know, I've realised this sort of quite a lot, actually, as we've been, you know, chatting to different people. And I've been, yeah, I felt like, you know, because I've been in this world for so long and, you know, you've known me since what? Since I was about 10 years old?
About that, yeah. You may have been 11.
Yeah. And I genuinely thought that, you know, I knew quite a bit or I suppose taking a lot of it for granted, you know, Gareth. Mm-hmm. And when I say to people about you and about Lester and Julian and, you know, all of the people that actually we're all in a WhatsApp group with, it is almost like being in in the presence of celebrities in some people's eyes because of what you've done.
Well, there have been a few things along the way. I guess I've contributed to, but we shall see. Once you try and pull all the memories out of me, we'll see how I do.
But it is, I mean, it is amazing, and we could wax lyrical about everything. But I suppose as well, what I've learned very quickly is that it's never ending, is it? You know, it's not just a case of, okay, we've got to this part and we've done this research and we've had this breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
It's then, well, what next? What next? You know, what does that mean? Do you never get just tired?
No, not really. I mean, what's interesting is, yeah, everyone thought when the genes were identified, it would all be cracked, everything. We'd know everything within a few years. And it just hasn't quite worked out like that, that it's just spawned more and more research and more need to check things and check, is there a risk of this or that cancer with BRCA1 or BRCA2 or ALB2 or whichever other gene? And it doesn't just happen overnight. It requires a lot of epidemiological research and then lots of lab-based research. And, you know, there isn't yet a gene therapy for BRCA1 or BRCA2, you know, and it's 30 years since BRCA1 was identified, so we shall have to wait and see. There are certainly big breakthroughs, though, that have happened, and PARP inhibitors for BRCA1 and BRCA2 are a major, major breakthrough, and we know that we can improve the treatment and survival.
And I suppose as well, like when, it has been important for us to go back, and sometimes you think that, I've told my story or you know, we've shared mum's story, but there's always people that don't know, you know. And it is very important to look back and analyse the progressions that have been been made, because then people can see it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They can see, wow, this is huge. So for you then as well, I remember, like, obviously when Mum came to you, and we've spoken about this in the podcast before, you were looking for families like ours to be able to sort of carry out this research and continue in finding these genes, which, you know, we initially thought was just BRCA1 and BRCA2. Now there is a whole host of them, isn't there?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there are somewhere between 12 and 14 genes that are definitely associated with at least what we call actionable risk, so at least moderate risk of developing breast cancer. So, many of them do also link with ovarian, and then some link with other cancers as well, and we're discussing that today. Really, probably only PALB2 is akin to BRCA1 and 2 in terms of level of risk and the sort of tumor spectrum that people are at risk from. And it's almost as common as BRCA1 out there, but the risks are slightly less than BRCA1, so we don't see quite as many people out there with breast cancer who have PALB2 mutations. But it's definitely the number three now, and it does have some implications for men as well, as well as the possibility of passing it on to their children.
Mm. So this is one of the big things that we kind of wanted to particularly cover, especially in these next sort of wave of episodes, is men, and not just in terms of them carrying the gene, even to do with kind of the after effects. You know, we held a day the other day, which was beautiful, actually, and something that we are going to grow. And initially, it was to sort of say to the dads, look, you know, we see that you're navigating life now. A lot of the time they've lost their partners, probably quite young, and then they've been left with young children. And sometimes those young children obviously then are going to be at risk of carrying a gene, potentially, but nothing that they can do about it at that time.
Yeah.
You've then got these young guys as well who are, we know what blokes are like. It's not me just being stereotypical. You are, you know, they're proud and they don't want to show weakness and they want to be there for their children and they're trying to navigate parenthood on their own and work. And, you know, it's the minefield. It is the minefield. And I think a lot of the time what we're just trying to say is that we see you. You know what I mean? There's not much that we can do, but we're here. So, you know, we did that the other day at the Yorkshire Wildlife Park, which was just gorgeous. But of course, one of the big messages we do need to get across, and we still need to get this across, because it is mind-blowing how many people don't know that, of course, men can carry the gene. So if we go back to the basics of this and describing it, is that everybody carries the gene, don't they? It's just that they have a fault in them.
Yes, so that's absolutely important, that these genes are on the autosomes, so they are on genes which every man and woman has two copies of. So you can inherit the fault from your father or your mother. We all have two functioning copies of them. The problem comes not necessarily when you've only got one faulty copy, but when your cells lose the normal copy of the gene as well. And you're just so much more likely to lose the normal copy and therefore both copies when you already have one copy faulty. And that's why you're one step on the way to cancer by inheriting a fault in BRCA1 or BRCA2 or PALB2 or many of the other breast cancer genes.
So what is the, you know, just to explain to people, what is the implications of a man who carries one of these faulty genes? What can it mean in layman's terms?
So the most important gene from a man's point of view is BRCA2. It's also the most common of the breast cancer genes out of the higher risk breast cancer genes. So for a man, they have about a 40 to 50 fold increased risk of breast cancer. It's still low risk, but it's a 4 to 5% risk, or a 1 in a 1 in 20 to 1 in 25 chance of getting breast cancer. So it is by far and away the most important male breast cancer gene. For all the other genes, there's probably some increased risk. Interestingly, BRCA1, which arguably has a higher risk for women of breast cancer than BRCA2, is no greater than the other genes. They're all at about 0.5%, 1 in 200 lifetime risk, compared to about 1 in 1,000 for the average man. And that's probably because BRCA1 particularly predisposes to estrogen negative type of breast cancer. About 70% of BRCA1 in women is estrogen negative, and we almost never see estrogen negative breast cancers in men. So when we move on from breast cancer, then the other main cancer that's associated with the breast cancer genes is prostate cancer. And again, BRCA2 is the major culprit there. So if we say that the lifetime risk of prostate cancer for someone born in 1960 is around 12%, around 1 chance in 8, for BRCA2, it's more like 1 in 3, or 35%, will develop prostate cancer. And importantly, it's quite an aggressive form of prostate cancer. So it's really important, if you have a fault in BRCA2, that you get yourself screened. Currently, that's an annual PSA test starting at about 40 years of age. The other genes are less convincing. BRCA1 was always thought to be linked to prostate cancer. And there's some evidence there. There might be a slight increased risk at younger ages, but it's far from convincing. There's many studies show no increased risk of prostate cancer with BRCA1. So men who carry faults in BRCA1 only have very slightly increased risks of cancer overall. The other genes, ATM is quite a convincing, that's a moderate risk breast cancer gene, quite a convincing prostate cancer gene, and pancreatic cancer gene. And pancreas is probably the fourth cancer that, you know, there's some evidence for. And again, BRCA2 is by far the biggest risk, probably about 5% lifetime risk for a man, about 1 in 20, and less for a woman. And again, BRCA1 is not that convincing, but there probably is a slight increased risk of pancreatic cancer. So if we take the lifetime risk for anyone is about 1%, it might be about doubled in BRCA1. PALB2, again, there's evidence, as well as ATM, that pancreas is an issue. Unfortunately, there really is no proven screening for pancreatic cancer. So we only really offer screening if you have a fault in a convincing pancreas gene like BRCA2, and you have a family history of pancreatic cancer.
I was going to ask that, because, pancreatic, being honest with you, it terrifies me. And I know I'm not at risk because BRCA1 isn't that. Yeah. But I've watched people with that, and it's nasty. I mean, nothing's not nasty, but do you know what I mean? And I kind of sort of think now, you know, you've answered the question, really. What can you do about that? You know what I mean? What should people be doing? And I see a lot of people ask these questions as well on our Facebook groups and on our social media groups. That and melanoma.
So melanoma is, again, probably BRCA2. There's an increased risk of melanoma and other skin cancers. Again, really not convincing for the other genes. Although CDKN2A, which incidentally is a melanoma and pancreas gene primarily, there is some evidence now, but it's a rare gene, about 1 in 10,000 carry faults in CDKN2A. There is some evidence that there might be a moderate risk of breast cancer with CDKN2A. So that's now sort of being added to the sort of gene panels that are looking into this. But it's very, very rare. So it's not one that particularly comes up. But for women, probably a moderate risk of breast cancer if you have faults in CDKN2A.
Wowzers. I mean, again, you know, like you throw all these things out there. And I think, like, again, going back, we looked at BRCA1 and BRCA2 and we know those kind of statistics. And now we're adding all of these other things in there. Is the, you know, some people might be listening to this going, is this a positive that we're finding all of these? Or is it just putting fear in people? Is it, will it ever stop?
So no, because you can do something about almost all of these. I mean, pancreas is probably the exception to the rule, although multiple cancer early detection blood tests, that may be something where pancreas really is something that it can be done about. But please don't go out there thinking that the multiple cancer early detection tests like GRAIL are good for breast and ovary. They are not. They're hopeless. So for breast cancer, MRI screening is amazing. It's really, really good. Very, very, very high cure rate if you're in an MRI screening program, above 95%. So, you know, for people who don't want to go down the risk-reducing mastectomy line and, you know, can cope with screening, then MRI is as good in terms of saving your life as having risk-reducing mastectomy. So that is a huge, hugely important issue. For your ovaries, when you don't need them anymore, when you've had your children, you need to remove your ovaries and fallopian tubes to prevent ovarian cancer if you have BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene faults. There is work now going on where you can keep your ovaries but remove the tubes. Obviously, you can't have children naturally if you've removed the tubes, but we think about 90% or more of ovarian cancer originates in the end of the tube rather than in the ovary. And so there are a number of ongoing studies internationally, including in the UK, where women are having their tubes removed early, and then when they hit the menopause, they're having their ovaries removed. And we will wait to see whether that is as effective as removing both at the same time or whether there are some issues. But it means that women won't have to go into an early menopause if it works. So there's a lot of really important good things that can be done.
I mean, yeah, this is the whole point, isn't it? You know, things are moving so quickly and, you know, and we're learning so much all of the time. I mean, goodness me, to be able to have something done where you could be at less risk and not have to go straight into the menopause, that is a big deal for us BRCA carriers. And I would suggest actually, you know, we're going to talk more about this on a separate one, but I would suggest actually it's probably the harder choice. I know it definitely was for me, you know, take my breasts any day, but that the ovary side of stuff was and still is, I suppose, the hardest recover in that, you know, you are not a physical, but you are an inner different you.
Yes. And I mean, you know, about a third of women get very significant hormonal side effects from being plunged literally into the menopause, often as young as 35, 36 years of age for BRCA1, to be able to counter the vast majority of the risk. And, you know, HRT is very effective, but if you keep your breasts longer term, probably not up to the natural age of the menopause, but longer term, there may be some issues. And it doesn't necessarily treat all of the side effects of the menopause. Sometimes you need to have a little bit of androgen to help with libido and things like that. So it's obviously better to be natural if you can. And if these new studies do work, as we're hoping they will, we will have the alternative to have just the tubes removed first.
It's all in the plan, and it's amazing. Again, like I say, to have these chats so that people can be aware of this and they can see this. Going back to the male side of stuff, with the breast cancer risk, I've not known. And I probably am wrong. It doesn't mean that there isn't any, but I've not known a man have a mammogram or have a scan. So, is that something?
Yeah, so it can be a little bit tricky because really there isn't enough breast tissue to do the mammogram with. And so we don't tend to do mammograms even in BRCA2 carriers. Now, if you have gynecomastia as a man, so you have literally moobs or whatever you like to call them, then you can have mammograms because having gynecomastia and a BRCA2 gene fault will increase your risk to maybe 10%, and you will then be at sufficient risk and have sufficient tissue to do mammograms. And there are other factors that it can increase the risk, such as taking estrogen. So obviously, trans females will have more risk than if they'd stayed male, for instance. So you need to, they need to be aware that they need to think about having screening, which they won't automatically be referred for unless obviously their medical records are changing then their genders to female.
I wanted to ask this, but I thought about we might actually do this as a separate podcast altogether, because that straight away and I have a lot of trans friends and I've said to them, have you ever thought about that? And they haven't, not in a million years. But it makes sense because obviously you're given more estrogen. Yeah, your body's then creating the breast tissue. If you are at a high risk of a family history, then, yeah, it would make sense. I do think that needs something that needs to be covered, actually, on a separate podcast if you'd be up for that at some point. So men then, right, like I say, this is why I'm always learning. If there is somebody listening now that is particularly a male BRCA2 carrier, what if they've got what we say moobs? Can they request a mammogram?
I think they can, and I think most centres would allow that they would be at least at an average female risk of breast cancer, and women get mammograms from the age of 50. So I think certainly from the age of 50, male BRCA2 carriers should be able to access mammograms if they have excess breast tissue, or if they have any of the other major risk factors for breast cancer. So anything that would increase the breast tissue. Very unlikely, but there are occasional people who have Klinefelter syndrome who are actually XXY. So they have two X chromosomes and a Y chromosome, and they have very substantially increased risk of breast cancer. So if you're Klinefelters and you have a fault in BRCA2 and it does occur, then they definitely need to have monitoring.
How do people find out about that? How do they know?
Well, men with Klinefelters are usually infertile, and so that is often a way of finding out. But you have to have chromosomes done in order to find out if you have Klinefelter syndrome.
Wow, there's so many different elements to this. And do you know what though? I made a bit of an observation the other day in that we learn so much, don't we, about the plants, the trees, what grass needs feeding, what flower needs to bloom for this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As humans, we don't really do that much investigating on ourselves at times. Do you know what I mean? And it is right. We're all made up so differently. So, of course, we all need watering and feeding differently, don't we?
Westfield Health, harder working health cover. Proud sponsors of the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast.
But we do need to break this down, because what for me has become really important about what we're doing is to make sure that the information we're giving to people is resonating and it's making sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we have to kind of do this in bite-sized chunks. And it's not saying, oh, people are stupid. Not in the slightest. It's saying, wow, that's a lot of information to take in, and it's a lot to to digest. So let's resonate with that bit for a little bit. And then if there's any questions after that, people can, you know, you can always email us, always get in touch with us, you know, and we can, the brilliant thing is, like I've said, you know, whether he likes it or not, Professor Evans, you know, I've got him on speed dial, friends. Do you know what I mean? We've got him on speed dial. We can get to him whenever, but no, let that bit go in. But I think we just do need to sort of, you know, end with one of the biggest factors that people don't realize is that men can carry the gene. Probably majority of the time, there will be no symptoms. There will be nothing for the man. But that doesn't stop him passing that gene on to his children.
Exactly. So there are just as many male carriers of faults in BRCA1, BRCA2, PALB2, etc., as there are female carriers. In fact, you know, potentially slightly more, because unfortunately, you know, women do die from ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So the number that don't live a normal life expectancy, if they don't know they're carrying it and aren't aware that they can access, you know, the wonderful screening that we have and the preventive measures that we can take, means that there are still, unfortunately, a lot of women who are dying with BRCA1, BRCA2 in particular, because they didn't know they had it before they were diagnosed with cancer.
Exactly. And this is the point. This is what we want to get across. And we need to be that voice. You know, I use this phrase as well. People are doing amazing things. There are incredible studies that you can be a part of, you know, and it doesn't cost you any money. It really doesn't cost you any money. But you can be a part of all of this and you can take some control. But we need to be able to help to get that message out there. Gareth, let's get you back again very, very soon. Look, we need to talk Wendy's World, because obviously you are a focal part in the up-and-coming musical that is coming out. How does it feel to know that you are going to be represented, your actual person is going to be represented in a musical?
It's a little bit weird to tell the truth, but who knows? Yeah, I mean, I better just vet the person. I think I should be involved in casting, you know, just to make sure.
I've said exactly the same, darling. I've given my list. I said, look, Angelina Jolie might be a little bit, you know, she's a little bit too old now, to be fair, to play.
I think she would. When did it start? When you're about 11?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You might need two or three actresses.
This is what's getting me when I look. Well, this is the point. I was watching my documentary only the other day, right, that we did back in, or was it 2006? And the amount of different hairdos that I had through the different years. Unfortunately for you, you only had one, Gareth.
I only had one. The bald head hairdo, yeah.
But it's wonderful. It really is. And I'm so excited about it. And I just think, you know, it's a proper homage to you and Mum, to be honest. You started in a musical and look now, there's one been written about you. Amazing.
Yeah, My Fair Lady.
So very true. Darling, thank you for everything.
Okay,
and I will
no problem.
Speak to you very, very soon. You're a legend. Thank you, sweetheart. Cheers. Professor Gareth Evans.
Cheers, everyone.